Dog. I heard these niggas is for real.
Dog.
Uh-huh.
That's my man, saying that.
But I heard these niggas supposed to be like locking down the industry on some shit, on some power shit.
Dog, that's my man's in them.
Mmm, I see.
So what I'm doing?
Right, right.
My man's in them is doing. Because.
Right.
That's my man's in them. You know.
I feel you.
Now you feel me.
I feel you.
I'm in New York right now, and I'm hanging out with my African-American friends. You want to say something?
I'm African-American, but I'm very white. I'm not black. But I'm definitely African American. I'm from South Africa. So
okay.
Cheers, cheers.
You know Trevor Noah?
Of course I do. He's,
do you know him? And what kind of
man? He dated my best friend.
He dated your best. All right. I think that's going to end the interview. We're going to go to the studio right there. My question. All right. Let me. No. I got to ask you this question. I got to ask you this question. Have you ever heard of the term manzas?
No.
What is a manzas?
Manzas?
Yeah.
That's a good fucking question.
Well, dear, a manzas is a term to when you express. So you don't know the definition of manzas?
No.
If, you know, like you say, that's my mans. That's my mans.
My people. Yeah. It all depends on where you from. Where you from, guy?
Nigga, you ain't got one mans. Manzas. Like, that's my manzas in them?
No.
Do you know DMX?
Yeah.
I'm from D.C. by way of Brooklyn, New York.
You in the East, man. You from you been to Patterson?
Patterson, New Jersey?
Yeah.
Yeah, they shoot in people. They shoot
right.
There.
Unless you my mans in them.
And this is the first dude that I didn't talk to in Harlem, New York, that don't have one goddamn manzas.
I got brothers.
Brothers, yo, so your family could be manzas.
Yeah, but I ain't gonna lie, but you feel me? Like, they not my brothers by blood. They my brothers by, you feel me, the bond that we got.
You can't shoot your mans.
You can't shoot your mans. You
but your mans can shoot another man's mans.
Who are manzas?
Yeah, like, that's my mans.
Manzas.
That's my mans. If you were to take a stab at what a manzas is, what would it be?
Like a homeboy, right?
A homeboy, yeah.
Right.
Somebody you ride or die with.
Right.
And where'd you build a bond?
From we build a bond from us being out here together.
Right.
And going through the same struggle.
So that's a man's.
Nah, that's not really a man. That's my brother.
Word is bond. If it's not your man's,
right,
the man's can get your man's.
But when DMX said in his song, that intro, he said, that's my mans. I think it was deeper than just being somebody that you know, don't you?
I don't know. DMX come from a different era. I'm in a different era than DMX.
Oh, you the mumble era. Can a mans just be a female?
Yeah.
It is?
I think so.
Fuck me if I know.
Whoa, too much information. This lady's off the hook. We talk about two generations. DMX represents a generation when your waist was a 32, but you wore a size 42.
Your waist is a 31, you wear 31.
Yo, that's the new generation, son.
If you heard the term manzas, right?
Manzas?
Yeah, like, that's my man.
Yeah.
All right, what is that definition? What does that mean to you?
Well, it means that, you know, the person that you're dealing with is good people.
Right.
You know, if they're your manzas, that means that, you know, they're willing to support you in all the things that you need to do.
Right.
You know, they behind you 100%. So that's what would make them your manzas.
Right. So if somebody say they manzas, and then when you need them to step to the plate, they don't step to the plate, that's not really your manzas, right?
No, it's not. No, it's not. That's actually what we call F-A-L, foul individual.
Foul manzas.
Foul manzas.
You be my manzas?
I be your manzas.
All right. God damn, it's easy to get a manzas out here in these.
You want to do a little outro? I have a show. It's called The Donnell Rawlings Show. Can you send a message to all my fans out there? It's a podcast. It's on YouTube and streaming everywhere.
Sure.
What message would you send to my fans? Oh, my God. She is out of control, ladies and gentlemen. See, if that was me, I would be locked up right now.
Oh, no, wait. What's the name of my podcast? There's no such thing. It's called The Donnell Rawlings Show. You never heard of it? Check it out. One of you niggas is going to jail.
One of you niggas is going to jail.
You.
Hut.
I don't know how we start. Can I start the show? I can start the show? All right. This is Donnell Rawlings, a.k.a. Donnell Rawlings. If anybody's listening or watch this podcast, hopefully you watch some of the beginning of my podcast. This podcast, the Donnell Rawlings Show, started 5 episodes ago. It was inspired by the king of podcasts, Mr. Joe Rogan, and then doubly inspired by the musical talents of the RZA, a.k.a. leader of the Wu-Tang Clan, a.k.a. Bobby Digital. So when I first started this podcast, I wanted to be clear with everybody that I don't know what the fuck we're going to do with this show. This is the Donnell Rawlings Show. That's an umbrella for a lot of things. Sometimes you may see me in the studio. Sometimes you may see me in the street. Sometimes you may see me rocking with my beautiful and very angry, nasty, so disrespectful to me co-host, Kate Quigley, who couldn't be on this episode, and I'll explain why a little later. But what I'm trying to say is that this is the podcast about absolutely nothing. And one of the reasons why I wanted to do this podcast, because I felt that I had a voice that I needed people to hear, not just on stand-up, not just on television, not just in the movies, but just on some daily or at least weekly thing. So, and part of that was to do some of the episodes in Los Angeles, California. Shout out to the Hollywood Improv for letting us do podcasts from Bud Freeman's office. Part of it is going to be in Kate Quigley's living room. Some of it is going to be on the street. But holiday season, so I had to travel. I got a lot of good friends in New York City. A lot of friends I want to visit, but I did not want to stop the progress of the Donnell Rawlings Show, because I know you trolling motherfuckers will find something to fucking talk about. Yeah, we like his podcasts, but it's not consistent. Yeah, he got a good podcast, but maybe he should shut up sometime and let his co-host talk. Yeah, he needs more content. Yeah, this, yeah, that. And I try to acknowledge you motherfuckers, but at the end of the day, I give a fuck. But at the same time, not at the same time, I don't give a fuck, because I got to hear my true voice. And some of you motherfuckers have commented and said that we love your true voice. And for those people, I appreciate you. And for the negative people, I appreciate you also. I'm getting a little winded, long story short. The production has moved for an episode to New York City. As you can see now, with our surroundings, we're very consistent with our production in L.A., meaning bootleg as a motherfucker. I'll probably try to get a shot of this some kind of way. I'm going to probably get a shot of our whole setup. I mean, we got like about $42,000 worth of equipment, which this motherfucker, this show is so disrespectful. This show is so disrespectful. Would y'all let me?
What up, Donnell?
What's going on, son?
How you feeling?
All
right. Happy holidays.
I know you have no podcast etiquette.
Oh, my bad.
I know you have no podcast etiquette.
This is a podcast?
Yeah, this is a podcast. All right, I know you guys have no podcast etiquette, but what I was trying to do in the world of podcasts is introduce and set up the backstory of what's going on in the podcast.
I knew that, and that's why I was going to wait. But since everybody else came in, I just thought I would just join in with everybody else. I knew what you were doing.
Again, if we were doing this as a professional, if we had a staff, where people be like, okay, Jimmy, you go in now. Okay, pull up. Jermaine, 40. Now, I'm going to get to the fact of I called one person two names, Jermaine and 40. First off, this episode is called the Manses episode. And it's a
my
word.
Manson.
It's a word. It's singular and it's plural. It's a word that I use a lot. It's a word that I use. First off, I'm going to put a disclaimer. I'm not responsible for the actions, the voices, the opinions of anybody on this fucking panel. And this is me feeding into the whole definition of a manses. And I'll get the urban. It's not a Webster's dictionary version of it, but I know it's urban dictionary. Later on, we're going to see if we can Google the urban dictionary of a manses. But from my knowledge, a manses is someone that you hold in high esteem, is someone that you respect, is someone that you appreciate, is probably someone that's been through some goods and bads in your life. It's a term of endearment, and it's a word that I don't necessarily use too frequently unless it's my manses. So before
you motherfucker. And this looked like the worst police sketch lineup ever. I don't know if we got a wide shot of this right now, but if anybody is watching this right now, they'd be like, what the fuck is wrong with this picture? This is like, this is what I consider a walking caption this. This is a cap. This is the weirdest bunch of people. This feels like a specialty bag of Skittles. Every once in a while, Skittles has a different theme. Like, this is like Gay Pride Week. You know what I'm saying? Like African American Week, and they have a special bag of Skittles. This is like probably the worst bag of Skittles that I've ever seen in my life.
Retardation week.
And you know who always going to want to represent the most? The ones that speak the fastest and the loudest with the most obnoxious fucking voice you ever heard. So, is it okay for me to do a formal introduction?
Are we calling this the Manza Show, or is this the hate
show?
I'm
calling it the Manza Show. It's not okay. The hate show. I mean, there's plenty of reasons why I could have hate, but I don't have hate. It's nothing about that. In fact, this show is totally opposite of that.
It's all
love. This show is all about love. This show is about trying to find out what the clear definition of a Manza's is, maybe sharing some stories of what defined conversation or a point in time where...
And what stories, too.
And what stories are... That sounds like you're about to come at me, son. You know what I'm saying, son? I don't know. That was, like, really aggressive. And you used your most professional voice ever. You just sounded like Jermaine.
I'm just trying to be clear.
All right, you want to be clear. That's the perfect thing. All right, so I'd like to say this. Again, thanks for anybody who's been watching the Donnell Rawlings Show for the last 5 episodes. I appreciate it. If you haven't been watching it, I'm getting used to, like, how you try to get people to do what you want. But subscribe. And hit that button. Don't forget to hit the red button. Subscribe on YouTube. We're on all the platforms. We've been ranking or charting for the last 4 weeks. I know that's because it's a new podcast, but it's still inspiring when I get to see like our progress. So,
absolutely.
Without further ado, can I get water? Do we have a? We don't have a producer, do we?
Yeah. Right next Brother Bear's on. Brother Bear's here.
A Brother Bear?
Brother Bear's here.
Brother Bear. That sounds like a cuddly name for something. I don't know what it is.
He's a wholesome. He's really like Brother Bear, the movie. Like Walt Disney. He's just a wholesome, great guy all around.
I met him earlier today. I met him earlier today, and I was a super fan because he's a Washington Redskins fan.
I knew that. When I saw the hat, I said,
Right? What? You are a fucked up ass Giants fan.
Yo,
haven't had anything to be excited about for the last 3 years. I see you a man that wears plenty of fitteds, but what I haven't seen in a long time is you wearing any goddamn Giants paraphernalia.
Because they are paraphernalia is the same as last year.
Not paraphernalia.
Yeah, memorabilia, you're right.
Yeah.
You could call it paraphernalia. Yeah.
All right, this motherfucker only have a team. All right, back to the introduction. To my right, I don't even know where this camera's going. To my right, if you've been following me on social media probably for the last 3 years, you know that I have a very popular hashtag that it's called Too Soon with Donnell Rawlings, where whatever's in pop culture, whatever is the most topical thing out there, whatever's popping in the streets in the world, we're going to have our vision of what we think is too soon. You've seen him on my page. You've seen his work on my page. I fell in love with his work. Maybe, I don't know, but maybe 4 years ago, he probably can give you a little bit more clarity. But Andy Singer, a.k.a. Bearded Humor, ladies and gentlemen. I don't know if we got to clap. Do we got to clap?
Yeah, we got to.
I'll give myself some applause. Why not? Self-love.
Yeah, and I'm telling you, for a comedic duo or connection, you probably would never put us together. Unless you were a fan of Russell Simmons and Rick Rubin, because that's the combination. That's what you get right here. But I'm going to introduce everybody. Jimmy Martinez. Jimmy Martinez has a podcast. What's your podcast?
Fire in a Hole. NY. It's just Fire in a Hole.
Fire in a Hole. It could mean a lot of things. Fire in a Hole could be like you had some nasty ass Mexican food. Fire in a Hole. You know what I'm saying?
Chicken Felita at a Waha or whatever that shit was. Wawa.
Wawa's the shit though, son.
not at 4 something in the morning.
It's the best time. That's the best time for Wawa. What other time would you go to Wawa? Wawa, when you traveling, man, you get excited because you can have your Subways and everything, but there's something about, going to a computer screen. And being able to do extra mayo, extra salt and pepper or whatever. Yeah. But the podcast is called Fire in a Hole. I know it's definitely fitting because this probably is one of the most firecracker motherfuckers I know in comedy. I've been knowing him for how long have we been knowing each other?
Fucking A, dude. Over 25 years.
25 years. I consider Jimmy to be a man's. And then with that, you know, you got your ups and your downs in relationships.
Right.
I don't really think you could call anybody man's if you haven't had a situation where you wanted to motherfucker wring each other's motherfucking neck. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
We've all this. Jimmy Martinez, a talented comedian, talented actor. Get in trouble, get out of trouble, get in trouble, get out of trouble, get back in trouble. I'm in trouble again. Dad, what am I going to do right now? And the reason why I say dad, because this is one of the guys, I remember when Jimmy Martinez first started doing comedy, I think it was like 17 or 18.
You were
17, not me.
When you got to New York, I was 17 years old. I was 16 and a half.
That's what I just said.
17. But I started when I was 15.
We didn't ask when you started, but here's another thing. No, here's another thing. You know the motherfucker is going to lunch out with a nigga at a grown-ass man still saying he was 16 and a half. Yo. I'm just saying, son.
Son,
you just blew your cover, son. Yo, there is no way a grown-ass man supposed to be like, yeah, I was 60 and a half. I was a big boy. That one, you knew me when I was a little boy, but a big boy. But I said that just to say, you know, the history. I remember he was a young comic just starting. But we got some stories, interesting stuff to talk about, an interesting history. When you say the word man's, you say somebody's been true to you, has been down with you. And I don't, you know, some people can gauge on how long, but I don't know. Again, I don't know if it's left or right, but to the left of me, if you've known me, if you see me, you see him. If you see him, you see me. And if you see him and you don't see me, that means I'm locked up. If it's vice versa, that means he's locked up. And a lot of people that's watching this, and they probably going, get a close-up. You got a close-up of him?
You don't have to tell Brother Bear that, baby.
No, close-up. Right. You know what I'm saying? In the streets, y'all look at him, and y'all be like, oh, that's my man, 40. It's my man, 40. You know, like, about that life, what up, what up, with the frack, what up, 40. But what you don't know is that's the street name. But when he's around... White people? No, not just white. When he's around, I would say that. I ain't gonna just say white women.
Nah, he knows how to play.
No. When he's around women, all of a sudden this nigga name is Jermaine.
When I'm around professionals, my name is Jermaine.
Jermaine Johnson.
Yeah.
I mean, and it's so funny because I remember we were somewhere and I said, anybody see 40? And this girl said, who's 40?
Yeah, she
was like, you mean Jermaine? I'm like, who the fuck is Jermaine? I'm like, who the fuck?
And you're like, who's Jermaine?
I'm saying to myself, I don't know this goddamn Jermaine.
You have
I don't
to be professional
Jermaine.
When you're around professional people, though.
Yeah, we can be around professional. That's the next level. You know what I'm saying? Sometimes you got to step your game up. I know people rocking with nicknames and stuff, but sometimes you might have to let that shit go. Reason why I have these three people on the stage because... all three of them represent different times of my life. I go probably way back more. Are you all right? Maybe you need not to smoke, son.
Yeah, I was going to suggest the same thing.
Let's talk to him like, oh, Jimmy, don't smoke, dude.
Nah, man.
Are you going back? You might want to put it out.
I'm here. Let's go. All right. I'm not a quitter, man.
And sometimes you can gauge. Sometimes people want to gauge. Well, yo, you my man's. I've been knowing you for 25, 35 years, 40 years, whatever. But Andy, how long have we known each other? 4 years?
Probably about 4 or 5 years. Yeah,
4 years. And I mean, for the people again that don't know our history, whatever, and our connection, even how we met. How did we? I know. For me, I first met you because I ran into some of your work on Instagram. I don't know. You came up on my feed some kind of way, and I was like, God damn, the Photoshop and this shit, the motherfucker and his pages are bearded humor. I was like, this motherfucker can do anything with a beard. Anything with a beard. And I was like, this motherfucker have a Santa Claus beard. I don't know how to explain like what his particular work, but when I first ran to his page, it was all thing because it's bearded humor. Then as I started to see, I was like, his Photoshop skills, and not only that, but just his sense of comedy. You know what I'm saying? Like, it's the one person that could do Photoshop But then there's another person can do it and just make people laugh and be able to express a story through one photo. What was your first connection with me?
It was, I noticed that you had, I think, liked a picture or two of mine, and that's basically back when I started, and it was bearded humor. It was putting beards pretty much on anybody.
Can I just stop anybody, for a second?
Anything.
I don't want to be the interrupter, son.
I'm not RZA.
You got braces, son!
I know.
Oh, you ain't see that already, son? You ain't see that, son? Oh, shoot, man.
We got the oldest young niggas. Yo, we got this, though. This is the oldest, youngest pod podcast ever. He say when he was 16 and a half years old, and he's got 16 and a half year old braces.
I'm back to 13 again.
Yo. You gotta get back to your story.
Yeah.
But why now, son, braces?
Because I've been going to the wrong dentist for years. I finally went to a real dentist, and when they looked at my mouth and saw the overcrowding, they said, you have a lot of plaque buildup. It's dangerous for your heart.
Right.
So I said, okay, what do I do? And they said, you can't do anything except for get braces, straighten out the teeth so you don't get the plaque buildup.
Right.
So now I have braces. And it's not for the looks, because I have no looks.
Right.
So
we all can agree that.
Exactly.
We all can agree that. And I mean it.
My modeling days are over. It's fine.
I don't want to get on this guy's bad side. He would tear your ass up on the mean.
It's for health issues, and I've had them a month now, and I've broken 4 braces. I'm sitting here actually with a wire whipping around in my mouth right now, because I just keep breaking them.
And I know your daughter, Dakota. And I know she just, it's so funny. Because she just had braces taken off.
Yeah, she just got hers off, removed, and yeah. I got mine on.
How long she have them on?
Three or four years. She had for a while.
What was her reaction when she first saw you with the braces? What was
she
her
She just laughed her ass off.
Oh, yeah. For real?
She just laughed her ass off.
Yo.
But then she's reminded me of all the hints that I reminded her of when she had to get hers. So we're helping each other out. So
that's a good story, man. Awesome dad too. But back to the story. When you were saying our first...
Oh, yeah. And then I was just like, whoa, hey, you know. So I sent you... The very first meme I ever sent you, you posted up an Usher just come out with a video, and you said, damn, I wish I was there. I immediately went, took that Usher screen capture, threw you in the picture, and sent it to you. And you were like, oh, my God, fire, keep them coming.
Right.
And then that was... And then we kept with the memes, and then it became a friendly thing. We started learning about each other, talking about each other, talking about comedy... and what it meant to each other. And I think one of the very first conversations that we ever even had face to face was, I said, if you can learn to laugh at life, death, and everything in between, then that's the key to life. As I was saying it, you said it along with me. Yeah. And I knew right then and there that, and we pretty much are like
original click.
He can hit me up with an idea. He can throw two names at me or something, and I'll be like, okay. 99.9% of the time we're on the same page. Right. There is that one or two times when you hit me up or I hit you up and we're just like, what?
No, that's that time when you ain't smoke no weed, right?
That's what it is.
Look at our producer choking off the goddamn weed over there. Oh, shout out to Kevin Smith for that bomb-ass weed.
Yes.
But that's it. We'll get jammed over that. But, I mean, like, when you talk about, like, there's a lot of people that do the memes, you know what I'm saying? If you're doing social media, that's a big driving force on how you're going to get more fans, people like it, whatever. But, yo, when I talk about somebody that's, like, always on it, like, too right. soon, like, I could be sleep, right? I could be sleep. I'll wake up, and I'll have an idea. I'm like, oh, shit, I want to get Andy to do this. And I'll be like, yo, and then he say, stop, check your inbox. It's already in it.
So what you're telling me is y'all met on the internet, and yeah. it was just like you guys went to high school together type
and when we
vibe.
Had, we, it was that vibe, but... another part of the story that was interesting to me is that, you know, I became a fan of your work on social media. You became a fan of mine on social media, but your connection with me, and it's not throwing names out there or anything like that, but it's just reality of life.
Yeah. Yeah.
I had the opportunity. That's what motherfuckers always, when you gonna stop talking about it? I am so sorry that I had an opportunity to be on one of the most iconic sketch comedy shows in the history exactly. of comic. One worked with one of the best motherfuckers. Mm-hmm. But our connection for you was a little more than just recently with social media.
Yeah, it was through the Chappelle Show, and it was through the laughter. It was my son is 18 now. He's special needs, a lot of health issues. When he got sick, he was 3 and a half, and it was up and down. He was touch and go. He was given last rites many a times. He had 2 strokes, lost everything, went back to basically the beginning, had to relearn everything. after being in PICU and another hospital, we finally went to a rehab hospital. And I probably hadn't been home in 4 weeks, really, hadn't been home. My wife finally went home after the doctors finally decided, okay, you got to start taking turns going home. She went home. She brought 4 weeks worth of mail back in. And we were like, okay, we got to catch it. We can't fall behind. We, you know, we'll figure it all out. And one of the things in there, we had pre-ordered the Chappelle Show first season DVD because we loved the show.
Which was a hot goddamn item.
It was.
Yo, back in the day, and I don't want to get off topic, but, you know, sometimes I cut people off because I have a thought. One of my friends, Van Lathan, who works for TMZ, he's in the ballroom. Shout out to Van Lathan. He told me during the height of Chappelle Show, he used to work at Best Buy, right? And the Chappelle Show made them, they had to do an inter-office email they had to send out because the DVD was so popular that the people that worked there mm-hmm. were getting them and buying them before they hit the streets.
Wow.
They wasn't even making it on the shelves. So the Chappelle Show was the first time to bust that record where motherfuckers had to say, you are not allowed. I think they gave him a limit or whatever.
Right.
But when I first met Van Lathan, that's what the short story that he shared me about. That show was so iconic and so popping. And so interesting that you brought up the whole DVD. That DVD was, probably the last of the DVD selling like that. But you had the DVD.
We had pre-ordered the DVD. And like I said, we're going through all the mail. And I remember when I moved some mail and I saw the DVD and I was like, oh, that's cool. I was like, take that back home. We can't watch that now. And my wife looked at me and we both kind of looked at each other like.
This is why you were in the hospital?
Yeah. And my son was in a coma-like state. He was unresponsive. We didn't know if he was going to make it or not. You know, we still had no idea. And we were like, this should go home. This is not the time for comedy. And we looked and we stared at each other and we read into each other and we said, no, this is the time that we're going to need this DVD more than anything. And I cannot tell you how that DVD, but we were in a rehab hospital for 8 months after that. We lived in a rehab hospital. And during that time, it was always touch and go. Never knew what was going to go on. Every single night, my wife and I would get, you know, one of the kids' TVs that they had out in the hallway that everybody would bring in. And there were three other families. And all the families that we were in the room with, all the kids, everybody was in bad shape. It was a dark time. We would pop that DVD in, and we would watch it. And let me tell you, we would laugh our ass off. Mm. Some nurses would come in, and they would love it. Some would come in and be, eh. One doctor came in one night, and she was just like, you know, this is kind of disrespectful. And it was immediately, we're filling this room with laughter and love.
Right.
That's what these kids need, and that's what we need right now. And after a while, other parents started realizing what we were doing, and they were coming in, and they were watching it with us.
That's
so, awesome. I mean, you know, to be able to have the manzas that we have I still look at it all the time. Like, it's incredible that you played such an important part in the worst time of my life. And it's a tough thing. I know a lot of special needs families, and it's difficult on the parents all the time. I really honestly and truthfully believe if we didn't get that DVD, we wouldn't be the same family. We wouldn't be as far along with Jaden as we are because of the way we look and the way we laugh at everything because of, again, realizing laugh at everything. No matter what it is, my son has seizures all day. I joke about his seizures because those are part of my jokes.
Right.
It's tough, but it's my truth. It's my reality and my therapy. Mm. And it was.
And so I've heard that story. One of the things that I appreciate the most about being on Chappelle's Show, when I go places and I meet, like, I'll be out and I'll meet, like, a vet. I mean, I'll meet these guys. Like, just, I did three tours in Afghanistan. And I've heard guys tell me that it was times where I thought I was going to crack. I didn't know if I was going to go home. And the one thing that always brought everybody together was the laughter that they shared with watching that DVD. And, like, when we first met, I know it was kind of weird for you because our friendship started popping off real quick. And I know, and not to say I'm the super celebrity or whatever, but that's very random that you just meet somebody on social media.
Right.
And then you connect with them. Right. You know what I'm saying? You connect with them because I know he probably looking at me like, oh, shit, that's that nigga ass shit. Well, he probably wouldn't use the N-word, but I don't know. You spent time in Pocket.
No.
I just want to make sure. That was a test. No. See, I just tried to. I gave the nigga test. I gave the nigga test real quick and see. He was like, yo, these my nigga. What?
If I'm singing some DMX in my car, it's Ninja. It's Ninja.
Yeah, you got it. But, you know, and I know it's like, oh, man, this dude, blah, blah, blah. But and I was telling you, this is what people don't understand. Like, you know, celebrities, where we still human. You meet people sometimes and you connect with them. And when I connected with you was like, first, it was the humor that you expressed in me. I think that's a whole different skill set you have to have. And then as I followed your page and I started to follow your journey, and it's not a secret to anybody that you have a special needs kid that we fucking love. Like,
love him to death.
Our kids. And I'm saying to myself, and at the time, I was a pretty new dad. I was excited about doing being a dad. You know what I'm saying? I still am.
Excited? Yo, that's an understatement.
Nah. I was really, you know, I was like, I was on it. And then with that said, and I know how tough it is to be a dad. You know what I'm saying? I know how tough it to be a dad under normal circumstances, and not to belittle anything, under normal circumstances of the crying and everything, the needs you have to do. You got to get up, you got to change the diaper. And then I started thinking, I was like, God damn. I was like, this motherfucker's not just dad, he's super dad. To have to work with what you have to do, the regimen, with the medicine and everything. And I felt like, and I tried to say something to you about it. I said, and you cut me off. You cut me off in mid-sentence. I was like, man, I know how tough it is. And you said that you cut me off as if, nigga, don't even do, I mean, African-American.
Ninja.
Ninja, thank you. Ninja, don't do it. Don't do it.
And you get that. I know you get that a lot. But what did you say to me that just shut me down when we were talking?
Probably, if it would have happened to your son.
What would you do?
What would you do?
What would you do? And I'm telling you, man, and it made me really think. I'm like under whatever circumstances, whatever that happens in life, what would you do? And then when you said that to me, like I looked at your face and I was like, I looked at your face and I said to myself, I would do exactly what the fuck you doing. You know what I'm saying? That when we go visit you, we travel, me and 40, that's my man right there. If you see him, you're going to see me. Man, and you always say when we get around you guys and we post a picture, you're like, this is the best day.
Yep.
You know what I'm saying?
Always.
Jada could be having, and I'm telling you, I could feel it. Because when, man.
Jada know when we there.
When we up in that
time,
bitch.
We about to eat.
Yo, it's
we
up
about
in
to
there.
Eat, bro.
We doing whatever type of comedy we got to do.
Yep.
It's going to be on. And just to see his face light up, and just not only to see his face light up, but to see, and you have bad days.
Yeah,
you've told me about that, but you know, never to make an excuse, never to bitch about anything.
Right.
And then, with that said, to be able to channel that into the thing that one of the things you have to respect about comedy is what it does for your soul and what it does to people.
Exactly,
that's the number one thing you do. I share that when through my stuff, and you shared through your stuff, and me and this guy, we'll sometimes be off.
We'll be
off like a motherfucker. You see us like a week free, we be like, yeah,
yeah.
Something ain't sweet in the milk, as my man used to say. What's his name? Slaughter used to say, still country thing. Man, something ain't sweet in the milk. That's some old country shit for saying shit ain't right.
Yeah.
But we'll be like, oh, let's take a couple days off. But I'm telling you, when we get on fire,
when the momentum gets going, man, come up with some hitters.
And I wanted, and like, again, this is Maz's, Jimmy Martinez, the wild child, the group home, the foster kid.
Y'all relationship, listen, real shit, Andy and Donnell, I'm listening to y'all relationship, and G-Money, don't it kind of remind you of you and I and Jonas?
Yeah.
Because we met this guy over in Sweden.
Can I say one thing really quick? We don't want that producer to have a voice right now.
Unfortunately. Nah, G-Money's got to have a voice.
Nah, we edited him, son.
It's not G-Money.
No, he shitted on my equipment, son. He shitted on my equipment. He shitted on my investment at B&H Studios yesterday.
Oh, B&H?
B&H.
Yeah. Corey Holcomb loves B&H.
I love it, too. I only want to talk about G-Money. Thank you for helping us, but you shitted on my shit. And we're going to get a shot of your shit that you shitted on me with, son.
Yo. That relationship, man, that the internet is so illy, man, how it brings vibes together, dude, because just to hit it off like that and to not have an agenda, it was just genuine. It like, just for you and for him, that's a one in a million, man.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So that's just like, just to see
and
that
I have
shit.
Manses like that. Then I have manses like you.
Yeah.
The manses that are very emotional.
Very.
It's way too big to be emotional. I think emotional motherfuckers should be like Kevin Hart's size. Kevin Hart would be emotional. A person that I consider Jimmy to be like a son, a little brother. If somebody had like well, an old dad like myself, but so much like a son and a friend or whatever, and like a motherfucker that you oh you got kids. Everybody, not everybody got kids, but you live in a family structure. You got kids. You got three kids. You got one kid is like this, one kid is like that, and then you got one kid. You'd be like, huh. Yo, you be like this. You be like this. You got one kid. You like this. I'ma pray for him. Yo, I'ma pray for him. God is good. I'ma pray for him. That one motherfucker that call you at the middle of the night, and the first thing you like, is everything okay? Is everything okay? Okay, I just want to make sure everything's okay. That one you don't know if you're going to get a collect call from. That one guy that you say you heard from Jimmy, you're like, is everything okay? Is everything okay? That one kid that you know, it's that trouble kid, like, he can do the work.
But
he's just talkative and his energy. He could do it. I knew he could do the work, but he just loses his focus. That one, the teacher knows that the guy has some potential, but I don't have time.
That sound like me when I was younger in school.
That's probably part of all of us. I don't have time. I don't know if I have time. It takes too much time. And with that person, you try to give them all the life lessons you can. You can't give them to them all at once because they're not ready for them. You give them a little piece. You be like this. Take this and put it into the world. Take that. I can't give you too much shit because you're going to fuck it up. So I'm going to give you a little bit, and they take that little bit of shit. Guess what they do? They fuck it up. Just like you thought they was going to fuck it up. And sometimes with that fuck up, sometimes when you mentoring or like raising a kid sometimes you give them enough stuff. Look, he didn't even know to turn his phone off. All right, let's take a time out. What, you got to take the call? You got to take the call?
No, I'm sorry. I'm sorry. All right.
Well, you got that one person. Everybody can relate to this in your life some kind of way. You got that one person. It's like, you know, wisdom is something that you try to give people. A lot of times when they're not ready for it, they don't hear it. So they hear bits and pieces of it. But it's not until something happens in their life where they have that experience and it hits them. You try to tell them, bruh, I know. Here's the shortcut. This is the advice I can give you as a shortcut, but be prepared for the long haul. You right. Got some people just see the shortcut.
Right.
Jimmy is one of those people. But when I said that, you can't, people like that move too fast, you can't give up on them because deep down somewhere, when you see something in somebody, you see the potential, you're like this, man, if you just could do this, if you could just do that, already know. And the reason why I say that, and I'm only being honest, we've all had experiences with the law and situations where we were removed from our family and from our friends. Exactly. And we call it, my father, we used to call it vacation.
Yeah.
My father would be on vacation for
college.
7 years.
Yeah, that's what we say, school.
Yeah,
we
college.
College.
Yeah. He had college sometimes.
We in college.
So I'll just say this. Jimmy's been to college a couple times. We've never seen a diploma, but he spent some time in college. And with that, every time I've seen him come from college, every time I've seen him give himself an opportunity, the motherfuckers always stay. I was like, how the fuck did this motherfucker get in so much trouble keep getting opportunities? Because when you got natural talent, you'll keep getting opportunities.
Exactly.
You'll keep getting opportunities. I was speaking on, are you really going to be on the phone doing the podcast?
No, Sam? I'm not. I'm right here. I'm not doing nothing.
Can a nigga suspend a motherfucker from a podcast? This nigga gonna get detention.
No, I'm listening.
You're gonna get to him. We're gonna get attention. He's gonna get attention. But again, he's that foster man's. You know, foster kids, no disrespect. My mother had foster kids our whole life. They a different breed. But you got that foster kid, you got that motherfucker that you pray for and you wish for the best, but you know at any time they could be a live wire, could flip something up. Our relationship started doing stand-up but years ago, and I've shared this story on other platforms. I had a group. The group was called The Secret Society. And it was an amazing group. I would consider, it's about the same time, it was like the Wu-Tang. I really believe that it was the Wu-Tang of comedy. You know, I had this group I started like years ago, some years ago, I can't remember. You look at my beard, you see the gray, you know it's been a while back. But I had this group, and it was a group. You remember
90s, man.
In the 90s.
The motherfucking 90s.
Who was in the group? Who was in the group?
Dude, fucking A. Let's off rip. Mike Epps, Red Grant, Rich Pierre Lewis, Don Formley, Jason Ondoors, Joe Clare used to come up.
Jimmy Martinez.
Myself.
Jimmy Martinez.
Fucking Donnell was at the helm of it. Dave Chappelle would come up. Erykah Badu was a regular at this spot. But the people that was in our group, these are the people I'm naming, like the Mike Epps and all of these people. Like, we had a fucking... a powerhouse cast, dude. Like no other.
We had what wasn't Donna Coy, RIP. She used to be a writer for Backstage Magazine, and at the time she was like, she was so happy to see Sketch Group, especially coming from as that diverse black round as our group was, meaning 90% black. She was like, it wasn't that many sketch groups, especially in the African-American community. She was happy with it. The sketch group was something. We used to go to the Brooklyn Moon Cafe. We would write the sketches. We were performing it.
Shout out to Mike.
Nobody was doing that. This group was blowing up so fast. We had a showcase. We had a showcase where APA was the fourth largest film and television agency in the country. And as a group, they said, we had a showcase. And as a group, they wanted to sign. We had a showcase. And then APA, they wanted to sign me. They was down with the group, but they was like, some people were green, it was new. They wanted to sign me and somebody else. And they said, we want to sign you, but we're not too excited about it. I don't know if I ever shared the story with you. We're not too excited about signing the whole group. And I told them, I was like, well, I'm here because of the whole group. So if you don't sign the entire group, I'm not going to sign. Cut to, they signed the entire group.
Nice.
Can you imagine going into a boardroom at APA, fourth largest film and television company in the country, and you sitting down, 12 motherfuckers, didn't have no agents, no nothing. They was raw and signing everybody to the group.
Wow.
So at that point, we had the group, and we was on fire. We was building up. We had one showcase. I think this was working onto our third showcase. This was going to be the big showcase.
Catch a rise.
We promoting it. Everybody's to the streets talking about secret society, oh, they the shit, blah, blah. We promoting it. And we ready to go. We have rehearsals and everything.
Right.
And out of nowhere, there was a member. First off, Jimmy was a part of that group. And Jimmy was the point man. If you don't know what a point man is when it comes to military, it's the person that goes out there. The first ones are going to get shot.
Yeah,
he's the one that goes to bed. And as much as I thought I was a professional, I was always nervous about going first. Everybody was like, I don't want to go first. This motherfucker didn't give a fuck. He always went first. He was a very intricate part of the success of the show. His energy was huge. It was the shit.
Oh, I'm humbled by that. Yeah. That's really
That's
dope,
the only good
dude.
Thing I'm going to say. But it's the truth. I already knew it, nigga. I'd never tell people my fears. I would never tell you I'm scared of shit. I was just like, just you go, nigga. Yo, he's like Mikey. He'll try it. Hey, Mikey. He like it. So we was going to have this big showcase at Catch a Rising Star.
Yep, I remember that.
Everybody's excited. We about to sell these tickets, whatever.
I remember.
And out of nowhere, and at the time, Jimmy was living with me.
Yep.
Jimmy was living with me. He was part of the sketch. He was my son. He was living with me. And this was so crazy to me. So I'm in my room. Brooklyn Mike was my roommate at the time.
Right.
And Jimmy was standing downstairs on a sofa, you know what I'm saying, whatever. And out of nowhere, I heard a door bust down. Boom! Look. Boom! Police. They bust out the door like hinges.
Damn.
The mic is in one room. Motherfuckers pulled out guns. And they was like, where is he? Where the fuck is he? Where is he? Brooklyn Mike ain't know what the fuck was going on. Brooklyn Mike snitch ass said, he in the other room.
And pointed to you?
Yeah, he pointed to the room I was in, right? Meanwhile, I just go to the answer machine, right? And I get a message saying, Hey, Donnell, this is Jimmy Martinez. I don't think I'm ever coming back there. The police bust through my doors looking for this motherfucker.
Yo.
They're supposed to be showcasing for the sketch show on Friday, son.
Yeah.
This motherfucker, this was the crazy, this was the movie inside the goddamn movie. And like wildfire, everybody in the secret society was calling me because the police was all, you know how it is, you used to be a cop. When they jump out, they jump out on five or six neighborhoods.
Yeah.
It's like, and three, and two, Bronx, pow, where the fuck is he? Yeah. Queens, pow, we want him. Yeah. At the same time, this is a true story. Yeah. At the same time, son, everybody is getting jumped out at the same time. Sheriff Davis is like, Donnell, what the fuck is going on? Yeah. Why is everybody looking for Jimmy? Motherfucking Rich Lewis is like, Donnell, what's going on? I said, I don't know what's going on. He said, Donnell, you know what the fuck is going on, right?
That's Rich. Yeah. Rich Lewis said Rich that. Lewis,
yeah, he was like, you know what the fuck is going on, Donnell. I'm like, I don't know what's going on, right? This motherfucker, the police. No, wait a minute. Yo, not the police was looking for him.
Right.
This nigga escaped.
They keep saying I escaped.
No, who is they? The police.
The police. Yeah. But the whole thing is.
Wait, Jimmy, really quick. Usually they is the police. And usually what they say, they kind of write about, right?
They
try to say I be robbing niggas. You just robbed a nigga. Nah,
but listen not to what you, I'm but, saying. Okay. Oh, what I'm saying is this, is that.
They.
Exactly. The police brought me into the precinct for questioning, and then they said, okay, you can go. And then you saw the trial. They were lying. This is why I won that trial. The police congregated a whole...
So they just said, okay, I got a question for you. They said you could go. Were you in a cell when they told you that you could just go?
No. I was sitting. How would I? How could I escape?
So they didn't. I don't know. How
this
you did
is what I'm. You imagine you being a jury, jury nigga, and the police tell. Yep, and we put him in the cell, and then we locked the key, and we blah 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 blah, and then we came back, and then he escaped.
But why didn't you? All right. So
well, I know some people who done it.
But son,
escape out
but son,
with the key
in the precinct,
Jimmy.
Yeah,
in the precinct. God bless his soul. One of my homies did
Jimmy,
it, man.
When they
yeah.
finally caught up with you, AKA captured you.
No,
wait a minute.
Well, okay,
you, okay, all right.
Okay, yeah.
Okay, I know you're scared, but you went to another state, nigga.
I was performing at Morgan State University. I was performing at Morgan State University. Morgan State University for Valentine's Day.
But you know the heat was on you, son.
My man, I was still going to get that money.
Yo, listen, I don't care.
What was I supposed to do? I was still coming to Catch a Rising Star at the motherfucking showcase, regardless. Like, dude. Y'all trying to catch me after I book all these shows, and I'm just gonna turn.
So what you trying to
after
say,
you just told me Jimmy, I can go,
so Jimmy? So what you're trying to say is that if someone is detained or arrested, right? If they have a schedule of shows, I just want to be clear.
Yes.
If they have if you don't have no shows, then you should just stay locked up, right? But if you look at your schedule, you're like, I'm supposed to be in Florida. You're supposed to go get the money, and then come back and talk to them.
But what I'm saying is, Detective John Flynn.
Yo,
he brought you in for questioning.
He brought me in from questioning.
Never put cuffs on.
Never. I was never in cuffs. And then after the questioning, he left out, made some phone calls, came back in, mm-hmm. and was like, all right, we'll be in touch with you.
So this is the same guy that bust down my doors and hinges.
Detective John.
You know what's
and
so
do
funny?
You know after I beat trial, do you know he retired?
Oh, what?
He retired.
The funny thing about that is that we were kind of slowing our ticket sales. I'm telling you, we were slowing our ticket sales that week. We was like, we didn't plan this publicity stunt, but we went from like a venue that was for 150. We had almost sold it out because the police bought all the goddamn tickets, son.
You funny.
Yo, the police, I'm telling the truth, son.
You know how I know he's not lying? Because when they caught up with me in Maryland and we're driving back, we're driving back, and how they caught up with me is because I called my son's mom and to check on my son and stuff like that. And she was like, yeah, I just want you to know that the police were here.
Oh, no, but Jimmy, I had to say, when they was looking for you, you was the worst fugitive I have heard. Your code words, yo, what? This motherfucker, Jimmy Martinez, right?
What?
J.M., right? That's his initials. Rich Lewis, R.L., that's his initials. Jimmy called Rich Lewis and said, hey, R.L., this is J.M.
No. No, that's the thing with Tony Woods and Rich Lewis and I. It was with nobody else.
Well, y'all already know. Okay, for that, what y'all do understand is that this is 100% my troubled child. My 100% guy that I'm going to be like, and everybody that's listening or watch this podcast, I'm saying everybody's relatable in this cast some kind of way. We all have that one where you just say to yourself, I'm just going to pray for him.
Just pray for him.
I'm just going to pray for him. Not moving along, but the reason why I brought up the whole story is like, how did it feel? Like, people know that I had a very interesting podcast with Joe Rogan and Nerissa. And I've explained before, part of it because as much as I was a fan of RZA, I felt like our lives had some parallels in regard to coming up with an idea of something, following through with it, dealing with multiple personalities, seeing it at its height, seeing it fall apart, and also still maintaining what you do as an individual.
Right.
And that's why when I was on that podcast with Rogan, I was overly excited because every time RZA told a story, I felt like I had something connected. So, oh, yeah, that happened to me. That happened to me. And I know, like, I would consider definitely Jimmy, when I had the sketch group, to be the old dirty bastard of that group. How did it feel for you to be, how did that feel for you to be a part of the group, the Secret Society, and a unit of people that individually everybody was headed for some type of stardom or some type of success?
You know, what was crazy for me at that age and seeing it all. You know what I'm saying? I'm sorry.
See? Y'all know?
Seeing it all.
Look at this. See?
Look.
The focus.
The focus.
Like, I only got to say nothing.
Listen.
I can
all right. You want to know what's going on? That's my weed guy. And the weed guy is here.
All right.
And I can't. Thank you.
Take the call.
All right. Take the call.
What do you think? I just threw you my phone just to take the call that nigga back. I don't want to miss the weed guy. All right. Now I can focus, man. Fuck.
You're going to need more than that to focus. But
no. Anyway, man.
Human Adderall.
I had a white boy that used to give me that.
I know that, dog.
Anyway. Listen, man. During that time, in that particular time, I saw something. And I was young, but I've always had an eye for talent. And I've always knew when something was going to be what it was supposed to be. Mike was something special. Red Grant, everyone brought something, but it was you that really had me believing that this can get done. Like, I've always, like, been around comics that had an idea to do something, but as you being a comic that was coming from out of state, you actually had a plan, but you didn't just have a plan. You had a fucking vision with the plan. I remember us at this club, bar called Vibes on Flatbush,
right.
and you just started going off on this tangent like you was a detective. And, like, a normal motherfucker would have been thrown, but I just went right back into character like I was a detective, and you was talking about how you're leaving the force. You know, you've had enough, and I'm
you see, Andy connected to that. He wanted the authenticity with that because he used to be a cop. He's like, how was, what type of cop was he? You would not look at him and think like, this dude, he looked like a suspect.
Yeah, yeah.
What did you say? Wait, when you stay away, what did you say? What, graduated? What did we say?
College.
College. Andy put people in college.
He get us through college.
Yeah, college.
I took 20 years off of weed, and now I'm back. So.
Oh, yeah. What's that? Yeah.
But I felt like, At that time, I really honestly felt like, wow, I'm a part of something that's really about to make an impact on the comedy community that other people wish that they could have or wanted to be a part of. Because what you, I didn't know if you noticed during that time, there were other people on the outskirts trying to get in.
It was too late.
I remember when you wanted motherfuckers.
Add, you can't just add woo members, nigga. Yeah. You got, something gotta happen, son. You're like, we woo free for a week right now. We woo free.
I remember we had a, you and I had a fallout. And,
which one?
The first one. The first one. When I was a teenager, the first one. And I blew up at the secret society joint. You're like, you're out of here. Don't worry about it. You'll never fucking come back. I don't want you, and I don't need you around. And it was just like, it was like, fuck you. I don't want to be around here. You know it. I know it. I'm the best thing that's ever happened in here. I'm leaving the group. And I said all this stupid shit, and Rich Lewis called me later on that day. He said, Jim,
you need the
hell is really upset with you. He said, but I think you just need to give him some time because this is your home and you need to come back. But don't call him for like a week. This is what Rich Lewis said to me. So I, my dumb ass, I try to call him in 3 days.
Yeah.
And
he doesn't listen.
And he gave me the cold, the steel door for like 2 weeks straight.
Yeah.
There was nothing. But what he didn't know was I was getting the loop from Rich Lewis was telling me what was going on in the background. He was like, yo, everything's off without you. Donnell is making it vocal in front of people. Jim, do not call him. Not today, because he'll know somebody went back and told you. Don't tell him. So my birthday was coming.
All y'all niggas was talking behind my back, nigga.
Hold on.
Y'all niggas like shit.
Hold on. My birthday was coming up. Yeah. So I knew, okay, if he doesn't love me.
Right.
During this time when I'm going in and he doesn't accept me, this is really all over. So it all coincided. This is when he got the pool in the backyard of in Cumberland, yeah. And he was cleaning the pool, and he told me, come over, I want to talk to you. Mm. And it was the weirdest conversation because he never really looked at me while he was cleaning the pool. But he was also explaining to me, like, I think I want you to come back. But there's going to be some rules,
yeah.
And there's going to be certain shit that, and, you know, I want you to know it's going to be different between us. You're going to have to earn this back. And I was just like.
But I, because I was like, and I understand people, everybody thought that, you know, everybody had something to contribute to. Everybody had specialty areas, you know what I'm saying? If you look at it, Mark Theobald now, he's a writer for Last OG. He's made a good career for himself as a writer.
I forgot about Mark.
Rich Lewis, he's like one of the biggest like
commercial actors.
Everybody is doing something, but I knew that not to say people wasn't going to shine, but I knew at that time it was a perfect platform.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? I was getting frustrated because I'm like, I mean, guess they don't see what I see because the arguments and it's, if you look back at it and you like the shit that we was upset about and everything, you look at it, it's like, man, if we think about if we could have squashed all that dumb shit, but that's part of growing.
I used to just get upset that Darnell wasn't showing me no attention. I didn't give a fuck about what was going on. Yeah, I was in the group. I didn't care. I get to get off the block on a fucking Wednesday. Yeah. You know what I'm saying?
And because, you got to eat too because I used to cook all the time.
But I'm just talking about at, the Brooklyn Moon Cafe. Oh, yeah. It was on Wednesdays, and Masoud and Erykah Badu. I knew that I would get to see Erykah Badu, and I just knew like, and I was, you were giving me confidence of my funny.
But the only thing, like, I'm gonna tell you, one of the things I've always been, I'm the magnitude misfits. You know what I'm saying?
Me too.
And I think that's partly my mom.
Because you're a misfit.
Of course, that's my background. But my mother always had foster kids. My mother was trying to save everybody in the neighborhood. There's always one kid that everybody gave up on. She always gave opportunity. My mother used to break running and get between people and fight. I was like, Mom, we can't do that. I'm like, these motherfuckers have beat me up. So I've always had a connection with people that people not necessarily get it yet. You know what I'm saying? It's like, they don't get it yet. They don't get it yet, but they will. You know what I'm saying? I don't have, a lot of people didn't have the patience that I had, but I knew that the dude has something.
Right.
It's obvious for a motherfucker to be able to get in and out of college like he was, you know what I'm saying? And get some opportunities like, goddamn, shake up the whole industry, you know what I'm saying? And just keep on giving himself opportunities. Obviously, there's some type of talent there.
Yeah.
Now, the guy right here to the left, Jermaine, what are you going by? What are you going by?
Jermaine 40.
Yeah, Jermaine 40. It all depends on how the conversation goes.
Yeah.
Yo, this is my, like I said earlier, if you see me, you see him. You know what I'm saying? When we first, this episode is all about who I'm connected with, people that I love. When we first met, you was getting out of college.
Yeah, I was just getting, around the same time Jimmy was going in college.
You was getting out of college?
Yeah, I was getting out of college. And,
if you you know what I'm saying? I want to see some of these goddamn diplomas. Hey,
you know what I'm saying?
But what was the energy? What was the energy when you came home from college? And this was, when was this?
98.
How was, what was the comedy scene like in New York in 98?
98, like Jimmy mentioned, the vibe. When I came home, I'm going to give you the rundown. When I first came home.
College?
Yeah, from college.
Cum culotta. What is that?
Yeah.
Cum culotta?
So my cousin Brooklyn Mike Donnell had the crib downtown Brooklyn, which is Clinton Hill section. And I was still living in Bed-Stuy. So my cousin Mike, one night I went out and saw the comedy and I got enthused about it. I'm like, this is dope. And I've been running on the street, you know, all my life. And he said, you know what, nigga, you need to try something different, man. You know what I mean? Get around me. You know what I mean? Try to find the shit out. So then, I guess they
also said stop fucking bitches on Jimmy couch too.
Yo, I'm about to get to that, yo. So I parole with my pops. I mean, I went home to my pops. Then I moved in after Jimmy went to college. I moved in with Mike and Donnell.
I didn't even know the nigga lived there.
Yeah, he didn't even know I lived there, nigga. I just started living there. So. Yo, I moved in. And you know, fortunately,
you owe me some rent, nigga.
I was in a position. Like when they were starting to do they was doing their comedy, I was in position to get a car. Cause these dudes ain't have license.
What?
None.
None of them ain't had no license.
We thought you was selling coke.
Yeah, man. Yeah.
No, that nigga had a car in his name.
Yeah, I had a car.
Go ahead. I'm sorry.
Yeah, we had a car. I had a car. And they had shows and shit. And I used to like taking them, man, because I used to have some fun. I can mention so many stars right now named that I rode to shows, but that's not even necessary. But it was fun. And I got to, you know, I know my Yeah, I got to fuck a lot of girls. I ain't gonna lie. I had fun.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
And you had more fun than me.
It changed my life from...
I'm the only person not fucking in here.
Yeah, yeah. It changed my life from running around in the street with my homies with, you know, them things and then switching over your life like, yo, promote the show. Get comedians to shows. And the shit was fine. My fly spot was the vibe.
Right.
That was my spot, man, because, you know, me and my nigga here, so, yo, if you get on that stage and you corny, Nigga, we'll heckle the shit out you, man.
Yes, you have it.
Yo, like, just fall asleep in front of the stage and shit like that. Right. But, you know, that was my life, man. Like, I said, you know what? I need to change all this. And ever since then, man, the comedy scene, man, has been the shit, man. I love it, man. You know, like,
it's was there during the Palm Court Lounge days, too. Oh,
yeah. Yeah, Palm Court Lounge. Yeah. Oh, yeah. I'm going to tell you a story about Palm Court Lounge.
Why you act like a snitch in school?
Yo, yo,
like,
yo.
I told y'all you had a
story. Hey, yeah. No, no. But this is a good story. I think this is the time he was shooting a wire or something like that. He's had popped his Achilles, right? And I'm up in the wire, right? This they know how crazy I am, like, because I was just calm and shit. So it was this lady got up there. Now, he doesn't explain to them, like, no, like, don't use profanity. I think it was like a clean show, like, no profanity. This lady, I don't know, remember her name or anything. She gets on stage and go ballistic. Now, I'm looking at D, and I'm seeing he calm. I don't see him mad. I don't see shit.
He never shows so signs said, of anger. Right,
fuck it. He is accepting it.
No.
When she got off the stage and D got on the stage, he said, didn't I tell, yo, he tore her a new, yo, he tore her a new asshole. But check it, though. She was with this real tall nigga. Now, I know he fucked up on his leg, so he not, you know,
Oh, yeah.
Quick like that. Huh? So, I'm, you know what I'm saying? This is my nigga. I'm like, yo, you know what I'm saying? Because by this time, I done been on the road with them and shit. Now I'm getting experience with this shit. So I see Hachee talking shit. And this big nigga, like, go towards the stage. Yo, bro, I swear to you, it's just instant reflex. I scooped this big nigga, just dumped him on his head. Big nigga Duke. And I'm like this. And everybody looking at me like, where the fuck this little nigga pop up from? But I knew he couldn't move, so, and I'm like,
but he was fresh out, he was swollen.
Yeah, I was fresh out, I was fresh out, dude.
Fresh out.
Yeah, because I was athletic.
With that glow, with that glow.
Yo, he'll push a nigga's stomach because he was ripped, he was hammed up. He be like, what you gonna do with that Pillsbury Doughboy? He be like, stop playing, man, that nigga was fresh out.
But, you know, but that was the fun part, man.
Palm Court Lounge was the fucking shit. That's where he put all of us in training.
Yeah.
Mark Leopold, me, Mike, all of us. What's you put dude? All of us into training there.
The other white guy, man, he's to be, he's Andrew something.
No, Gene Gray.
Oh, yeah, we don't talk about him no more.
No, I'm talking about the other dude. You, I think you,
Jason Anders.
Yeah, I liked him, man.
Oh, fuck Jason too. No, I'm just joking. I like Jason.
No. He was in Secret Society too, right?
Yes.
We
both and I we go far back to the point where we was childless. We didn't have kids. We first met.
We didn't have kids.
Yeah. And that's one of the things that we share in regard to having kids, watching them grow up.
Yeah.
And you. You know, you coming from college.
Yeah.
How did it feel? And this is like, I know I'm probably all over the place, but I think one of the things that I love more than anything about you is the type of father you are. How did it feel when you knew you was about to have your first child?
It completely changed my life, man. Because I'm going to be honest with y'all. A lot of people don't know I was injured before badly. Deathbed.
Jay-Z, Reasonable Doubt.
But after that, you know, God bless his man, you know, my pops passed away. And then I found out I was having a kid. And it kind of started me. I was scared because I ain't understand it. Like, I ain't never have no kid. I got nieces.
The circle of life.
You know what I'm saying? I didn't know nothing. And then I was still in the street. That's the only thing I was scared of. Like, can I get away from that? You know what I'm saying? And that's the thing that had me nervous, so I was like kind of like rejected.
Was this like your means of living also, of making money? Like
So I didn't want to connect my kid or my kid moms with that shit. And I didn't really want to have the kid, right? But as time was going, I was talking to, like, my cousin Brooklyn Mike, because he has several kids, you know what I mean?
That nigga got a whole basketball team.
That nigga got a franchise.
And that, he gave me a different look, you know what I mean? And then, you know, he say, you know, they say when you lose a life, you gain a life.
The circle of life.
And I didn't know it was going to be a boy at the time. I didn't know none of that. And when that happened, man, and then, like, when I finally seen him and held him, man, my life, I'm like, I'm putting it down, man. I can't do it no more. Because it's him. I don't never want him to have me in him that way.
And I've seen sometimes, like everybody, life is up there. I've seen some trying times. You're frustrated about work and different stuff.
Yeah.
And I just see you. You called me. Fuck this D.
Yeah.
Man, fuck this D. And I could tell. And I could tell. I was like, oh, this motherfucker about to kirk out. But even with that said, I always respect the fact that when like motherfuckers can figure out quick ways to get money and do some shit that you're gonna regret.
Yeah.
But you always, and a lot of people don't do it. You always put the relationship you got with your kid first and may squash that.
Yeah.
Another question. Your second kid, you got two kids, you got a daughter,
yes,
right?
Yes, I got a daughter, my beautiful
daughter.
And this
was an interesting story.
Go for it. Let's go.
Yo, I don't know. This is the first, this is the craziest way I've ever heard a nigga make an announcement about a kid, right? He said, he called me one day. He said, D, what's up? I said, what's up? He said, man, I'm having a girl, man. I said, when? He said, now, nigga.
Yo,
I'm like, how do you
what
do
the
that?
Fuck you mean? There was no like, no yo, D, you know, my shorty pregnant.
I hit that shit, but this is funny. I said, what happened? This nigga said, when the Remy's in your system.
Yo, son. And yo, and when we was on the road and everything, right, I was getting the calls, right? And I'm like, just make the fuck out of here with all that bullshit, right? I'm getting the calls. I ain't believe it, right? Whatever the case. And when I got and I found new, I'm like this. I'm shocked again. I'm like, two?
Right.
And I'm like, oh, shit. But again, when you get them in your hand, man, it's just totally, if you come to my crib, you always see that picture. You seen in my crib, son. It's a picture of her just touching my lip. I look at that. Every time I get frustrated, that's the picture I look at, man. You know what I'm saying? Because that's going to keep me focused on what I have to do for them, man. You know what I mean? I can't lose track and shit, man, because it's easy. Like you said, it's so easy, man. The devil still walks out, man. It's in these streets, bro.
But you know what you could do?
What's that?
You could do the same principles and the same thing that I do with my kid.
What?
And be like, just pray for him.
Oh, just pray for him?
You gotta pray for him, listen. You gotta pray for him, man.
You know, this is what made me know that you was real family. You was real gang. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, it was Donnell that brought me to Brooklyn. Right. I was a Harlem nigga.
I didn't bring... You just forced you. You just started living there, man.
I followed you to the Palm Court Lounge.
He said you just started living there.
He ain't lying. That kind of happened. It just happened. It started one day he cooked. I was just hanging out there. He cooked. Yeah. I was like, oh, word. And then, I went to the store and they let me back in. There was no pressure about me leaving.
Yeah.
So I spent the night. The next day, niggas was doing comedy. I spent the night again. They didn't care. And then I just realized, wait a moment. I'm not a bother here. I'm here.
You was a bother. You ate all the food.
You kept cooking. What the fuck was I supposed to do?
Yo, you ate all the goddamn food.
Hey, yo,
you would disappear at the right time.
Hey, yo. Are you serious, Donnell? You would send me to go get all of the stuff. The eggs, the bread, the butter.
Yeah.
But that does not mean stay.
You think because you go get the bread, like, oh, I'm going to be here for a week. I just got a week worth of rent.
But this is when I knew you were gang. When you guys shot up.
Mm-hmm.
When Donnell went to go see you.
Oh, let me tell you.
When you was laid up, bruh.
Oh.
And niggas wasn't present.
Yeah.
I remember you telling me later on, like, yo, I just went to go see 40, dog.
And let me tell you, this nigga bust my staple. He bust my staple, too. He bust my fucking staple.
What? He didn't say that.
No, not like that.
Oh, no. So let me tell you.
I'm on joke time. What am I supposed to do, nigga? I'm sorry. I'm in the hospital, right?
I got staples from the top of my stomach to the bottom of my stomach, right? Colostomy bag, everything. So I'm sitting there. I can't even move. If I move a certain way, it hurts. Here, this dude come in. Serious face. I don't see a joke or nothing coming. So, you know, like, damn, son, you all right? I'm like, yeah, whatever. We talking to shit. I see that smirk. I turned my head. I said, go ahead, son. Go ahead. That nigga started, son. I was in the bed. I swear to y'all, I was in the bed like this. Yo, son, I was in the bed like this. I said, yo. And then.
He was like this. He was like this. Stop playing.
Yo, son, I couldn't do.
He was like, you gonna bust my stitches. Stop playing.
And that shit bust, too. So I told him the next day. But the doc was like this. What you was doing in here? And my sister was there, I think. And she was like this, laughing. I was like, yo, it was fun. But yeah, that time in hospital, I was in there, man. Even like, shout out to Tony Woods, man. That dude called me, man.
He's a legend in comedy. Tony Woods is a legend. Mm-hmm. And after about 30 years, he's starting to get his props. If you don't know Tony Woods, make sure you follow him.
Please.
One of the funny, like, when it comes to DC comedy, for most part, every DC comic from Tony, from his period on down, has some type of a piece or something part of Tony. Tony Woods was Dave Chappelle's mentor when he first started doing comedy. He used to take him to the clubs when Dave was too young to go into clubs. And even Dave Chappelle has he won the Mark Twain Prize. It's going to be airing on PBC.
Yeah, he shouted Tony out at that.
He shouted a big shout out
big
to
shout
him.
Big shout out to Tony Woods.
Shout out to all of, yo.
Tony is doing the Art of Comedy in D.C. in March. Okay. Shout out to Tony for that, man. That's really big.
Tony with a legend. Tony with a D.C. legend. Fat Dr. D.C. legend. Martin Lawrence. There's so many comics come out D.C. I consider myself a D.C. comic that has migrated to New York and got a chance. And the reason why, like, this episode for me, I was like, I want to talk about, like friendship, share some stories.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? It's something different. Shout out to Kate Quigley. She couldn't be here because this is the holiday time and we out, and I wanted to be able to say, we can do this anywhere. It's the reason why all three of these guys that on this couch today, one of my closest friends, one of my fucking problem childs, one of my good friends, Andy, if you're excited about my social media, the page and everything I'm doing, it, this dude is a large part of that. Dope ass friend, dope ass dad, dope ass motherfucking meme dude. My motherfucking wild ass motherfucking son right here, Jimmy Martinez. Hopefully he doesn't spend no more time in college. You're already smart enough, Jimmy.
Yeah, college, we done. We got our degrees.
We out.
And my man, I don't know what you, what are you, Jermaine or 40?
Jermaine 40.
Y'all know him, Jermaine 40 Johnson. I want to go out. I mean, we're in the studio. This is not our space, but I want to do something different. I want to go. I wonder if the streets know what a man's is. So if y'all got time, we're in Harlem. We're in New York City. I love this place. My second home. Let's hit the streets.
Yeah, let's just do it. Let's just figure it out.
Thank y'all for watching. Make sure you subscribe and hit that little ding ding thing so you get more notifications. This is us figuring it out, the Donnell Rollins Show.
And thank you for having me, Donnell.
No problem. Yeah, thank you, Donnell. Man. Fire in the hall and
yo, this show is gonna be the shit. We're gonna get it together. Donnell Rollins, the Donnell Rollins Show. Peace. Hot.